Smoke was on his front porch having a cup of coffee and a cigarette when Johnny North and George Hampton rode up.
Light and set, boys.
Smoke, we rode out to Fontana and found that Lazarus Kane you've been looking for camped up there with all his men.
What made you think to look in Fontana? I thought it wasn't much more than a ghost town.
It was Johnny's idea, Mr. Jensen.
Yeah, I got to thinking after your visit when you told me Kane disappeared without nobody having laid eyes on him. There was only one place I know where that many men could hunker down and not be noticed.
It was a good thought, Johnny. No one would see them there because no one around here ever goes to Fontana anymore. Did you talk to him?
Tell him, Johnny. Tell him how you walked right into that den of rattlesnakes and chatted him up as pretty as you please.
Well, I noticed on the way into town that there were quite a few more men than Smoke had thought. First off, there were at least 50 to 60 horses on the street and in that livery, and I could count more than 20 men sitting around the boardwalks and gabbing.
You mean to tell me Kane has over 50 men with him in Fontana?
Well, at least that many. Anyway, we went into the saloon, that being the best place I know to pick up any gossip or see what's happening in a town.
You were very brave to do that, Johnny.
Oh, dumb is more like it. I've never been more scared my entire life.
It wasn't all that bad. The saloon was filled to the brim with hard-looking men. Smoke, you know the kind I'm talking about.
Yeah, Johnny. Men who look like us. Men whose eyes tell you they're on the prod, looking for trouble, and not afraid of it when it comes.
Right. Well, I'm having my drink, and I notice this tall, skinny dude over in the corner who looks like the man you described as the one-shot Cal. Sure enough, after a minute or two, he saunters over and starts asking me questions.
You should have seen him, Mr. Smoke. Johnny changed right before my eyes into another man. He got this look on his face, like he was meaner than a snake with a sore tail.
Yeah, that's my gunfighter face. Anyway, one thing leads to another, and he offers me a job. A gun hand type of job. Says he's got something in the works that's gonna make him all rich. Only he needs all the guns he can find.
He say what it was?
No. But I made up some story about going over to Pueblo to see Joey Wells, just to get us out of there. And he about wet his pants. He said he'd heard of Wells and sure wish he'd come to ride with his gang. I told him it'd be a couple weeks or more before we could get back, and he acted like they'd probably still be there then.
Smoke got quiet as he thought. He went over the possibilities in his mind.
What do you think he has in mind, Johnny? Did he give you any idea at all?
No, nothing at all.
Well, can't be a bank robbery. There isn't a bank in the territory that would warrant using 50 men, or that would make more than a few rich.
Heck, Smoke, if he'd robbed the entire town of Big Rock and everything in it, it wouldn't be worth enough for that many men.
Likewise, it can't be cattle or land. And there's no big army around here with a large payroll to rob. We need to get someone on the inside to see what Kane has in mind. Did he seem to trust you, Johnny?
Yeah, he thinks I'm still on the Owl Hoot trail, selling my gun to the highest bidder.
Wait a minute, Johnny. You're forgetting about Bob Blanchard.
Who?
Yeah, you're right, George. Bob Blanchard is the bartender over at the Fontana and seemed right friendly with Kane and his men.
Who is he?
He's a man who was on the fringes of the Tilden Franklin thing a few years ago. He wasn't directly involved, but when you shot up Fontana and ran off or killed all the gunnies, he sort of stayed around. Word is he's lived almost like a hermit up there ever since.
So?
Well, if he was in the know about what happened then, George thinks sooner or later he's going to remember that you and I sort of became friends and that I settled down up here and hung up my guns. If he does, then Kane will know I ain't no friend of his.
George is right. It's much too dangerous to ask you to go back to Fontana. If those men even suspect he wasn't what he claimed, they'd kill you without a second thought.
Trouble is, Smoke, too many of the folks around here were mixed up in that Franklin fracas. Blanchard'd be sure to recognize most of them.
Yeah, we need someone from out of town, and they need to be handy with a gun to fit in with that group.
Well, how about Joey Wells, Smoke? You think he'd do it if you asked him to?
It's not a bad idea, George. Not a bad idea at all.
Smoke, you can't ask Joey to do that. He's settled down now. And I got a wire not too long ago from Betty saying they'd had another baby.
I know it's risky, But think of the damage 50 hard men under the leadership of a crazy man can do to this county. Think of how many innocent people may get killed if we don't find out what they're up to.
Why not just call the army? Monty says he's a wanted man, and probably most of those with him are too. The army could just come in and arrest them all.
It won't work. Kane is an old rebel raider. He's going to have pickets posted all around the town who'll warn him if any threat is coming. The army'd never even get close to him. It's going to take just one man, the right man, to do the job.
Then you think he'll come?
Yes, because he's like me. If a friend needs you, no matter how dangerous it is, if I ask, he's going to be here. I'll wire him in the morning. See if he'll come for a visit, so I can explain what's happening and see what he thinks.
You'd better mention for him to steer clear of Fontana on his way down here. It wouldn't do for Kane to talk to him before you get a chance to explain things.
Right. I'll ask him to come the back way and not let anyone see him.
Well, that ought to be easy for him, since the entire Union Army looked for him for over 2 years and couldn't find him.
A week later, Cal was giving Smoke and just about everyone else around him fits. The young man was tired of being confined to a bed, and he wanted to get out and about. Cal looked up from trying to pull his boots on to see Sally Jensen standing in the doorway to the bunkhouse, hands on her hips, a frown on that pretty face.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh is right, young man. How many times do I and Dr. Spaulding have to tell you to stay in bed? If that lung wound gets infected, you'll die. Do you want that?
Cal pulled his foot out of his boot and swung his legs back up under the covers on the bed.
No, ma'am. It's just that I'm about to go crazy if I don't get out of this room. The walls are closing in on me, and I feel all cramped up. Kind of like I can't hardly breathe.
I know how hard it is for you, Cal, but it's for your own good. I know. I'll fix up a chair with a footrest on the porch of our cabin. That way you can get some fresh air and look out over the Sugarloaf and watch Pearlie and the other hands working cattle.
Oh, that'd be great, Miss Sally. Not as good as getting back in the saddle, but you know, almost.
Sally smiled and walked back to the cabin she shared with Smoke. As she was piling some sheets and blankets on a chair on the porch, getting it ready for Cal, Smoke rode up to the front of the cabin. He dismounted and tied Joker's reins to the hitching rail. When he got to the porch, he wrapped his big arms around Sally and gave her a gentle kiss.
What was that for?
Nothing. Just a hello kiss.
Smoke glanced at the chair she was fussing over.
What's that for?
So Cal can sit out here and get some fresh air. He says he's going crazy staying in bed for so long.
Hey, I don't blame him. That's one of the hardest things about being wounded, the recovery time.
What did you find out in Big Rock? Any news about the gang of bandits?
No. Monty says no one's coming to Big Rock from Fontana way since Johnny told us they were holed up there.
Did he contact the U.S. Marshal or the Army?
Yes. They said they'd get here eventually, because Kane and some of his men riding with him are wanted. But the Marshals are way up in the northern part of the territory and won't be available for some time.
What about the Army?
The commanding officer of the nearest fort wired back that they could only intervene if the governor requested it due to the gang causing massive civil disturbance, which they're not.
So what you're telling me is that we're on our own to deal with them.
That's about the size of it.
You look pleased. You really didn't want the marshals or the army to come here, did you?
Nope. This is our problem. And it was our friend they shot down in cold blood on our ranch. I'd just as soon take care of the snakes myself.
But Smoke, there are more than 50 men in that gang.
I know. I didn't say I was going to do it all by myself. There are plenty of men around here who will be glad to help rid the county of those pond scum over in Fontana.
Speaking of help, when do you expect Joey Wells?
I don't know. I haven't heard any answer to my wire, but it's only been a few days.
Do you think he'll come?
It all depends on how civilized his wife has made him. Sometimes settling down, raising a family, changes a man. Takes all the spirit out of him. He may not even consider picking up his guns again.
It didn't change you, Smoke.
Aren't you glad? You're not the kind of lady who wants a lapdog for a husband.
You're right. Life with you is many things, but boring is definitely not one of them.
Sally finished fixing the chair, adjusting the ottoman so Cal could stretch out in a semi-reclining position.
Smoke, would you go get Cal and help him over here? I'll fix a fresh pot of coffee while you do that.
Smoke walked over to the bunkhouse and through the door.
Hey, Smoke.
Get your boots on, boy. We're taking you for a trip over to the cabin.
After Cal struggled into his boots, refusing to let Smoke do it for him, he got shakily to his feet. Smoke stood next to him.
Here, Cal. Put your arm around my shoulder.
I can do it on my own.
Listen, Cal. I know you can. But Sally told me to help you over to the cabin. Now, do you want to go out there and tell her you don't need any help?
Oh, not really.
Neither do I. So make it easy on both of us and just kind of throw your arm around me so she'll think we're both doing what she says.
With some effort, they finally made it across the yard and onto the porch. Cal realized he really did need Smoke's help. The bed rest and the wound having made him weaker than he thought. He eased into the chair, sweat on his forehead from the effort to walk, and he pulled the blankets up to his waist.
Thanks, Smoke!
You're welcome, son. Now, you just sit back and relax. You've earned it.
The next morning, Cal was in his chair on Smoke's front porch just as soon as breakfast was over. Pearly, on his way to do the day's chores, stopped by to chat.
Well, how did it feel to be the king of the ranch, Lazy Bones?
Actually, not so good. I just know that without me out there to make sure things get done right, I'm gonna have to do them all over again once I get back on my feet.
Oh, is that so? By the looks of things, by the time you're back on your feet, it'll be smack in the middle of winter, and there won't be all that much left to do.
Cal started to answer when out of the corner of his eye, he spotted something on the horizon.
Uh-oh. Smoke! You better get out here! Looks like company coming!
When Smoke and Sally walked out onto the porch, Cal pointed off in the distance. A lone figure could be seen riding toward the cabin, taking his time, keeping his horse in a ground-covering lope.
Who do you think that is?
Unless I miss my guess, that's Joey Wells.
Mr. Wells?
Yeah, I guess he decided to just show up instead of wiring me back.
I guess I better cook up another batch of eggs and some bacon. He's going to be mighty hungry after riding all that way here from Pueblo.
Smoke stood on the front porch, watching as the figure on horseback slowly came closer to the house. His smile widened as he saw that it was indeed his good friend, Joey Wells. As Joey dismounted, Pearly moved closer to Smoke.
That's about the most dangerous-looking man I ever did see.
Smoke nodded, taking in the scar on the right cheek, the brace of Colt 44s and twin holsters on his hips, and that ever-present Colt Navy 36 in his shoulder holster. Smoke realized Joey hadn't changed one bit in the couple of years since he'd seen him.
Hey, old friend. Having a passel of babies and becoming a rancher doesn't seem to have tamed you any.
Not enough so as you can tell it. Cal, Pearly.
Howdy, Mr. Wells.
Nah, it's still just Joey to my friends, Cal. What happened to you to get you all bundled up in that chair?
Yeah, that's what I want to talk to you about, Joey. Come on into the house and tell Sally hello. I suspect she's got breakfast all ready for you by now.
Good. My wife said to tell her hello and to say she was right. The second youngin's a whole lot easier to raise than the first one.
Later, Smoke and Cal and Pearly and Joey sat on the porch, drinking after-breakfast coffee and smoking.
Now that we got the eating and the helloing behind us, why don't you tell me what's stuck in your craw, Smoke?
Smoke went on to tell Joey about Lazarus Kane and his gang, how they'd shot Cal and were holed up in Fontana, sitting and waiting.
What do you think they're waiting for?
God only knows, but one thing's for sure. They're up to no good.
You can make a bet on that. I hear about Kane whilst I was still fighting the Redlegs. He's a bastard clear through then, and I'm betting he ain't changed enough so as you can tell it.
That's what I need your help for, Joey. I need someone Kane will trust to ride on over to Fontana. Stay a while, and see if they can find out what his plans are.
Well, I think I know someone who'll be glad enough to do that for you, Smoke.
Well, it'll be dangerous. He might talk to someone who'll know we rode together a few years back.
So what? I rode with plenty of men I'd later had to kill. How'll he know it'll matter to me one way or the other?
You may have to prove yourself to him.
Nah, it's no matter. I've been doing that since I was knee-high to a toad.
Well, since it'd be too dangerous for you to come here to report, here's how we'll handle it.
Joey Wells rode into Fontana just before dusk, after circling around to enter from the north instead of the south. Joey looked at the bat wings. There had to be at least 40 or 50 hard cases sitting around the place, drinking as if the bartender was giving it away for free. He hitched up his holsters and walked into the room, pausing a moment, as he always did, to size up the place and get his bearings in case of sudden trouble. After a moment, the room quieted as the men inside noticed him standing there. One, a 6.5-foot-tall man who'd had too much to drink to sense the danger in Joey's eyes, walked over to him.
Hey, mister. We all much like strangers around here.
Sit down before I plant you, big mouth.
The man grabbed Joey by the shoulder and whirled him around, pulling his arm back with his fingers curled into a fist. Before anybody could blink, both Joey's hands were filled with iron. Without a moment's hesitation, he brought the barrel of one of his big army 44s crashing down on the man's skull. In another second, both pistol hammers were eared back, and Joey faced the room, as calm as if he were alone.
Anybody else got something to say?
From the corner of the table, a tall, lean, hawk-faced man stood up.
Well, I'll be damned. I do believe that's Joey Wells who just joined us, boys.
There wasn't a soul living west of the Mississippi who hadn't heard of the feats of Joey Wells. And to those south of the Mason-Dixon line, he was more than a hero. He was a living legend.
A couple of you boys dragged Max out and put his head in a horse trough. You can tell him how lucky he is to be alive after bracing Joey Wells.
After two men grabbed the fallen man by his boots and shoulders and half-carried, half-dragged him out the front door, Kane turned to Joey and held out his hand. Joey hesitated just a second or two, looking Kane in the eye to show he wasn't intimidated. Then he took the hand.
My name's Lazarus Kane, Joey. I heard about you when I rode with Bill Quantrill's Raiders after the war.
Yeah, well, we all did some riding after the war. Seemed like the thing to do at the time.
Joey turned his back on Kane and sauntered over to the bar.
Give me a whiskey. Use the bottle with the label on it in the corner there.
Bob Blanchard quickly grabbed the bottle Joey pointed out, jerked the cork out, and placed it and a clean glass on the bar in front of him.
I heard you had some marshal trouble over near Pueblo.
Johnny North told me he'd been by here. It's not bad with a gun. Got a big mouth.
He tell you I have some work you might be interested in.
I heard about you when I rode with Quantrill, Kane. I heard you was crazy. Always spouting off about God and the Bible and such. Are you crazy, Kane? Because I don't much cotton to working for a crazy man, no matter how good he is with a gun.
Lazarus's cheeks burned, and his eyes narrowed at being called crazy. He stood there a moment, muscles rigid, fists clenched, thinking on what Joey had just said.
You know, Joey, I probably was a little crazy back then. The war did that to some people. All the killing and dying, and knowing that if we'd had more guns and ammunition, the Bluebellies wouldn't have had a chance against us.
Joey nodded slowly. Kane was right about that. The war was crazy, and it made everyone who survived it just as crazy as it was. But this man was more than that. His eyes were burning with an inner fire, and it was clear if you studied him, as Joey did people, that he was filled with inner demons of some sort. He was plain off kilter. Joey had no doubt about it. He would have to be careful, because this man might just do anything for any reason whatsoever.
So, if I decide to work with you, what's the job, and what's my cut liable to be?
There's a local rancher whose land is plumb covered with gold. The man has no interest in it, but won't let anyone else try to mine it. We plan to kill him and his hands and take the gold for ourselves.
What's this rancher's name that don't have no interest in gold? He sounds even crazier than you, Kane.
Lazarus smiled. It was actually refreshing to have someone around who didn't walk on eggshells with him, who would speak his mind in front of him. Wells was proven to be every bit as interesting as he'd heard he was.
His name's Smoke Jensen.
Jensen, huh? Yeah. I rode with him a few years back. He helped me take care of some bandidos who shot up my family.
Oh, you rode with Jensen. What'd you think of him?
Fastest man with a six gun I ever seen. Except for me, of course.
So you and he were friends?
Joey's eyes turned hard and cold as stone, though his expression didn't change.
Let me get this straight, Kane. I don't have no friends, and that includes you. Now, just because I ride with the man, don't give him no claim on my friendship later. If and I decide to ride with you, I'll do what I'm paid to do, but when the job is over, don't make the mistake of thinking I owe you anything else, because you might be my next job. Understand?
You're a man after my own heart, Joey. Hard as nails and tough as a just-woke grizzly bear.
Yeah, so I've been told.
What do you think of the job offer?
I have to do some thinking on it. Jensen's mighty tough, and he's got lots of friends in Big Rock. How you plan to handle them?
Well, I'll tell you the details after you decide whether you're gonna ride with us or not.
Joey picked up his bottle and glass and walked to the nearest table against the wall. The three men sitting there looked up from their drinks, scowls on their faces.
What do you want, Wells?
I need your table. Fixing to sit down and eat.
You kiss my ass, runt. We ain't afraid of you or your reputation.
Joey turned and handed the glass and bottle to Lazarus. And when he turned back around, a long knife was in his left hand. Quick as a wink, the blade was against the snarling man's throat, and a tiny trickle of blood was running down his neck. The cowboy's eyes were wide and frightened.
Excuse me? I don't hear so well. Just what was it you said to me?
At a movement from one of the other men at the table, Joey filled his right hand with iron before the other man could get his pistol half out of its holster.
Do you really want to ante up in this game, mister?
Both the other occupants of the table scraped back their chairs and hurried out the bat wings. Joey looked back into the eyes of the scared man with a knife against his throat.
I'm sorry, but I didn't hear you answer my question. You said something about not being afraid of me, is that right?
No! No, I was just kidding. You can have the table if you want it, Mr. Wells.
Why, thank you kindly. That's right neighborly of you.
Joey pulled the knife back and wiped the blood off its blade on the man's cheek. Then he slipped it in a scabbard on the back of his belt as the man bolted from the saloon. Joey glanced up at Lazarus, who was smiling down at him.
Looks like you lost a man.
Well, it wasn't any great loss. I don't need any cowards riding with me.
That man wasn't a coward. He just knew his limitations. I don't call that yellow. I call it smart.
Well, smart or yellow, he's gone. And good riddance to him.
Lazarus Kane sat at the table and drank as Joey ate.
Say, Joey, what happened to those bandidos Jensen helped you go after?
They died.
You mind telling me about it?
Why?
Because I've been stuck here in this one-horse town for now on to 3 weeks, waiting for enough men to show up to take down Jensen, maybe even the town of Big Rock. And I ain't had nobody with anything interesting to say, to talk to the entire time. I'll understand if you don't want to talk about it, but I'd be obliged if you would, just to pass the time.
Joey paused to slab a thick coat of butter onto a tortilla. After he rolled it up and bit off half of it, he sat back in his chair.
A gang of bandidos had joined up with a man named Murdoch. Jensen and his men and me went to war with them. We managed to wound or kill most of them when the leader of the bandidos, a man called El Machete, because of his habit of chopping people to death with one, and Murdoch ran off to Murdoch's ranch. I'd taken some lead in the shoulder, but me and Jensen took off after him.
Joey went on to tell the story of his and Smoke Jensen's stand against the evil cattle rancher named Murdoch and his Mexican foreman, Vasquez. He finished the story by telling Kane of a valise full of money the pair had taken from the recently deceased Murdoch.
So, did you and Jensen split the money in the valise?
Joey hesitated. Smoke had given him the money to help him build a new life in the Colorado Territory. But he didn't feel like he could tell Lazarus that.
Actually, no. I took some to cover my expenses, but Jensen gave the rest to some ranchers who'd been burned out by Murdoch and his men.
Well, I guess what I've heard is right. Jensen don't have no desire to get rich.
He feels he is rich, with his ranch and wife and friends. He just don't love money, or the getting of money like the rest of us do.
You two seem to be awfully close friends in your story. Are you sure going after him won't cause you any second thoughts?
I done explained that to you, Kane. You got any second thoughts about inviting me in? I could leave any time. It's your call.
No, I'll take your word for it, Joey. But make no mistake about it. I don't never forget somebody who crosses me. And I don't rest until I've paid them back for their treachery.
Warning noted, Kane. Now, this town got any place a man could get some sleep? I've been on the trail so long, my feet are probably growed to my boots.
Come on now, I'll take you over to the hotel. I can't promise you clean sheets, but at least they'll have a bed you can bunk in.
Oh, hell, I'm so tired I could sleep standing up and leaning against the wall.
It was just after 3 o'clock in the morning when Joey slipped out of his bed and pulled his boots on. He stepped to the window and glanced at the sky. The moon had set, and the night was as black as the bottom of a well. Easing the window open, he slipped through it and out onto the balcony. He crawled over the rail and hung by his hands for a moment, then dropped 10 feet to the ground. Slowly, looking over his shoulder as he went, he made his way to the livery stable. He knew from his years in the war that the hours between 3 and 4 in the morning were the hardest for sentries on guard duty. For some reason, the mind and body seemed to shut down and not work well in those hours. He peeked in the window of the livery office, and he saw a man sitting at a desk with his head on his arms, fast asleep. Of course, the empty whiskey bottle on the desk next to him explained his condition, as well as the hour. Inside, Joey slipped a halter on Red, but didn't bother with a saddle. He walked the big horse out the door and down the street a ways before he jumped on his back. He continued to walk the mountain until he was past the town limits. Then he put the stud into a lope, using the stars as his guide through the inky blackness of the night. Smoke had told him to ride straight east and he'd find the place he was to meet Pearlie. Sure enough, after about an hour's ride, he saw a huge rock sticking up out of the relatively flat land around him. On the side away from town, he could see some smoldering coals where a small campfire had been laid. He slid to the ground and walked over to the figure lying in a blanket next to the fire. He reached out with his foot and gently nudged the form.
Hold it right there, mister.
Joey's hand went toward his pistol, but then he recognized Pearlie's draw. He held his hands out and turned.
You wouldn't shoot no friend, would you, Pearlie?
Pearlie eared down the hammer on his Colt as a shadow separated itself from the rock and moved toward him.
Howdy, Joey. I couldn't tell for sure if it was you or not, so I figured better be safe than sorry.
No, you did right, Pearlie. I was fixing to jump your butt by sleeping on a job when I saw that blanket next to the fire.
You want some coffee? I believe it's still warm.
Yeah, sure would hit the spot.
Joey squatted next to the bed of coals and held his hands out to warm them. The night was chilly, with the temperature almost down to the freezing level.
What'd you find out about Kane's plans?
No, not much. He still doesn't trust me enough to give me the details. But I did find out he's planning to come after Smoke at the ranch.
When?
That I don't know. What I can't figure out is why he's got so many men. It sure wouldn't take 50 men to raid Sugarloaf, even if they weren't expecting trouble.
Why does he want to come after Smoke?
For the gold on his land. He's heard there's enough to make a lot of men very rich.
Pearlie nodded. He, like most of the people around the area, had forgotten all about the gold buried on the Sugarloaf. In the aftermath of the Tilden Franklin affair, a prospector had come out of the hills around Smoke's ranch, loaded to the gills with fool's gold. Smoke had just let people believe that's what Franklin had found, fool's gold. Only a few people knew the truth, that the Sugarloaf was covered with the real stuff. Evidently, someone who knew the truth had been talking to Kane.
One thing I can figure is that after he takes out Smoke and the men on the ranch, he's going to try and tree Big Rock to keep it under control while he gets the gold.
Well, that's crazy. Nobody's ever treed a western town.
I agree. But I don't believe Kane's playing with a full deck of cards. Man seems to think he can't be beaten by anybody, no matter what the odds.
And you don't have any idea when this is all going to take place.
Nah. See, you have to warn Smoke and be ready at any time. If and I can, I'll try to get away in time to warn you, but that may not be possible.
All right. You ride with your guns loose, Joey. You're in a nest of snakes over there. Be sure you don't get bitten.
Adios, partner. Tell Smoke I'll see him soon, one way or the other. Oh, and tell Smoke to expect some visitors in the next couple of days.
Who's that?
Smoke will know him when they get here. His old acquaintances of his. When he wired me that he needed help, I figured if it was bad enough for Smoke to ask for me, it wouldn't do no harm to have a couple extra guns around, just in case.
Smoke nodded as Pearly told him what Joey had said.
Damn, I wish there wasn't any gold on the Sugarloaf. Just the mention of the word is enough to drive men out of their minds with greed.
He also said to expect some more help in the next few days. He wired some old friends of yours that you might need a couple guns.
I wonder who that could be.
Well, I don't much care. If and we're going to be facing 50 guns, we're going to need all the help we can get.
I know. All right, here's what we'll do. They most probably won't hit us during the day, so I want you to have all the hands rest during daylight. As soon as night falls, they're all going to need to be on guard.
Smoke, you know all the hands are loyal as can be. And if you ask them, they stick their hands in the fire for you. I don't know just how much help they're going to be in a real fight. Most of them men never fight a gun in anger, or at another person.
I know, but it can't be helped. If you want to give all the men a choice, if they don't want to stand and help, I'll understand. They can stay in Big Rock until this is over, and then come back to their jobs when it's done. No hard feelings.
Well, how about asking Mr. Longmont or Sheriff Carson for some help?
No. Out here, a man saddles his own horse and kills his own snakes. It's my home and my job to defend it.
What else you want me to do?
Head on into Big Rock. We're going to need plenty of supplies. Some dynamite and gunpowder and lots of ammunition.
Anything else?
Yeah. I need you to tell Monty what Joey said. The Kane might try to attack Big Rock after he's done here.
Pearly rode the buckboard into town so he'd have a way to bring the supplies back to the Sugarloaf. In spite of some protestations from Sally, Cal rode with him. Smoke intervened and said it was time for Cal to get more active anyway, or he'd turn to stone lying in the bed for so long.
How you feeling, Cal?
Pearly noticed Cal's face grew up in pain whenever the buckboard bounced over a rock in the road.
Well, not too bad, considering you've hit just about every rock between the Sugarloaf and town.
Well, it's your own damn fault. Drawn down on that many men without old Pearly to back you up.
You'd have done the same thing, Pearly. Don't you go denying it, neither.
Yeah, but I got more than two of the bastards.
Of course, their bullets would have probably killed you since you ain't had near the practice being shot as I have.
That's the truth, boy. I'll admit it. You have been shot more times than I can shake a stick at. Guess you won't hardly be wearing a shirt at all this summer. You'll be parading around showing that teensy scar to all the girls in Big Rock.
Teensy scar? Hell! Any bigger than it'd cover my whole chest.
As they pulled into Big Rock, Pearly slowed the wagon and stood up, the reins in his hands.
What are you doing?
Just looking to make sure ain't nobody doing any target practice. The way you attract lead, we're both liable to get shot by accident.
Pearly pulled the wagon up before the general store and jumped down to the ground.
Let me take this list into the store, and then we'll mosey on over to Longmont's for a bite to eat while they get the supplies ready.
Hell, Pearly, you just ate lunch no more than 2 hours ago. You hungry already?
It ain't a matter of being hungry. It's a matter of eating when you get the chance. The way things been going around here lately, no telling when I'll next get to chow down.
Pearly came out of the store a few minutes later and walked around the buckboard. When he reached up to help Cal climb down, Cal shook his head.
Don't even think about it, Pearly. I'm a grown man. I can do it on my own.
You ain't all that growed up, pup. You just stubborn is all.
Once Cal got down, they walked side by side up the street to Longmont Saloon.
Stick up those hands, gringo.
As both boys crouched, their hands falling to their pistol butts, Al Martine smiled widely, as did his partner, Luis Carbone. Cal and Pearly straightened back up, sheepish grins on their faces.
Al, Luis, when did you two reprobates get into town?
On this morning's train, compadre.
What are you doing here? Last we heard, you were down near Chihuahua chasing the girls and pretending to be respectable ranchers.
Luis shrugged, holding his hands out and tilting his head in the Mexican manner.
Senor Joey wired us that Smoke might need some help. So we got on the first train this way, and here we are.
Carbone threw his arm over Cal's shoulder and raised his eyebrows when Cal squinted in pain.
Oh, what happened, little Bronco? You sore?
It's nothing, Louie.
Nothing, hell. He took two bullets from a galoot named Lazarus Kane about 3 weeks ago.
Is that the trouble Senor Joey was talking about?
Yep. Seems this gent has got about 50 or so men gathered up at Fontana, and he's planning on riding on the Sugarloaf in the next few days.
Louis Longmont paused, a cigar halfway to his lips.
What was that, Pearlie? I hadn't heard that.
Pearlie told him about his meeting with Joey Wells out on the prairie near Fontana.
Joey says he don't know exactly when it's going to take place, but he says they're coming for Smoke for sure and certain.
Al pulled a half-smoked, chewed-up cigar bud out of his shirt pocket and stuck it in his mouth, leaning over to accept a light from Longmont.
Then it is settled. We ride today for Smoke's ranchito. He will need our help.
You boys eat all you want on my house. I have a few very important errands to run, so I'll see you later.
After getting the buckboard loaded up, Pearlie told Al and Louise to climb aboard, and they headed for the Sugarloaf. Al sat on the front seat with Pearlie and Cal, while Luis propped his back up against a couple of bags of flour right behind him. As they left the city limits, Al leaned back against the seat of the hurricane deck and lighted a long, smelly black cigar. He glanced sideways at Pearlie, a sly grin on his lips.
Senor Pearlie, Luis and me, we hear the rumors of a grande fight from when Senor Joey was here before.
You mean you heard about that little fracas all the way down in Chihuahua?
Si. El Machete was muy famoso. How you say? Famous in Mexico. Many of the vaqueros who visit speak of the time he was beaten by the outlaw Joey Wells and his compadre Smoke Jensen.
It was some howdy do, let me tell you. First off, this rancher Murdoch had hired himself a bunch of the most dangerous outlaws around, and he was set on bringing Smoke and Joey down. All we had to help us was a passel of men who barely knew which end of a gun the bullet comes out of, along with Louis Longmont, Monte Carson, and an old sheriff named Ben Tolson. Well, we were holed up in this little ranch, and Smoke had us prepare some surprises for Murdoch and his men, kind of even out the odds, man. Smoke had set up some men in the cabin, and others in some trees off to the left. Then he said he and Louis and Joey and Cal and me was going to ride like cavalry, attacking the raiders on horseback when they came riding in.
Then let's shag our mounts, boys. I want to get a little ways away from this ranch house so we can ride and attack without getting shot by our own men.
They waited while Cal and Pearlie mounted up, and then they rode toward Murdoch's ranch at an easy trot. Smoke had Colts on both legs, a Henry repeating rifle in one saddle boot, and a Greener 10-gauge scatter gun in the other. Louis rode with one pistol in a holster on his right leg and had two sawed-off American Arms 12-gauges in saddle boots on either side of his saddle horn. The two-shot Derringer behind his belt was going to be useful only in very close quarters. Joey had his Colt in his right-hand holster, his .36 caliber in his shoulder holster, and two short-barreled Winchester rifles, one in a saddle boot and one he carried across his saddle horn. Cal had the twin Colt Navy 36 caliber pistol Smoke had given him that he used while riding with Preacher. He also carried a Henry repeating rifle slung over his shoulder on a rawhide strap. Pearlie had double-rigged Colt Army 44s and a Greener 12-gauge shotgun with a cut-down barrel for close-in work.
Hell, boys. If Lead had this much firepower at Appomattox, he wouldn't have had to surrender.
An hour before sunset, the riders from the Lazy M came galloping towards Smoke Spread like an invading army of wild men. Smoke, Joey, Louis, Cal, and Pearlie were bent low over their saddle horns behind a small rise in a group of pine trees, waiting for them to pass.
I guess those assholes are trying to scare us to death with all that yelping like engines.
Don't worry none, Cal. We're going to teach these galoots a lesson they'll never forget.
Cal nodded, relaxing a little bit, knowing that he was among friends who would fight with him side by side against the devil himself if necessary. When Smoke heard gunfire being returned from the area of the cabin, he put his reins in his teeth, took his Greener 10-gauge in his left hand and his Colt 44 in his right, and spurred horse forward. Murdoch's men were in the trap Smoke had devised for them. Caught with the shotgun brigade hidden among boulders at their rear, and off to their left, hidden in the setting sun, the men with rifles, and to the front the cabin with its contingent of men, who, though not accurate with their weapons, were pouring lead into the outlaws at a furious rate, hitting some by mere chance. Cal and Pearlie had scattered a series of 20 small piles of kerosene-soaked wood across the clearing where Murdoch's men were trapped, and those were now lighted, making the area look like an army camp with its campfires. Just before Smoke and his band arrived from the bandits' right side, completing their boxing-in maneuver, Monte Carson, leaning out of an upstairs window, did as he had been instructed. He began to fire his Henry repeating rifle fitted with a four-power scope at the base of the small fires. The wood had been piled by Cal and Pearlie over cans of black powder and put in burlap sacks with horseshoe nails packed around it. Other traps began to become effective. Several trenches had been dug with sharpened spikes stuck in the box. Curly Rogers and his group of bounty hunters were directly behind Vasquez and Murdoch as they approached the cabin. Rogers was firing his Colt at the ranch house as he and his men passed a pile of boulders. Suddenly, Curly was blown out of his saddle, three buckshot pellets in his side. He bounced and quickly scrambled to his feet, barely managing to avoid being trampled by his fellow outlaws. Rogers clamped his left arm to his side, pulled out another gun, and ran toward the cabin, hoping to find another horse to get on. His feet went right through one of the deadfalls, and his legs fell onto two sharpened spikes. As he flopped on the ground, wooden stakes impaled in his legs, a bullet from the cabin aimed at another rider missed its intended target, but it didn't miss Curly. Gates, seeing the amount of resistance at the ranch, tried to veer his horse off to the left and escape. As he passed between two pine trees, the baling wire Cal had strung 9 feet off the ground caught him just under the chin. Horse and rider rode on, but Gates' head stayed behind to fall on the ground like overripe fruit. The half-breed, Sam Silverwolf and Jed Beartooth, trying to escape the fire from the cabin in the trees, whirled their horses and headed for the boulders, intended to take cover there among the rocks. Tyler and Billy Joe, leaders of the shotgun brigade, saw them coming, and they stepped into the open, guns leveled. Juan Jimenez was jumping his horse over one of the small fires when Monty fired into it. The Silverado Kid, Blackie Benson, and Jerry Lindy were riding next to each other. When the Kid realized the trap they were in, he motioned to his men to pull their mounts to the left. The three men rode hard at the trees, guns blazing, lying low over saddle horns. Mike and Jimmy were lying behind a log, their Henrys resting on it as they fired. The Kid jerked his reins to the side and pulled his horse's head around to head back into the melee around the cabin. He'd had enough of this damn rifle brigade. Explosions were coming one on top of another. Billowing clouds of gunpowder and cordite hung over the area like ground fog on a winter morning. Into this hell rode Smoke Jensen and his friends. Soon, all five men charging the murderers and bandits were firing shotguns and pistols and rifles into the crowd as they closed ranks with them. The mass of men broke and splintered as Smoke and Joey and Lewis and Cal and Pearlie cut a swath of death through it with their blazing firepower and raw courage. Smoke saw Horton and Mac shooting at the cabin from horseback, while Gooden, Boots, and Art South were nearby on foot, their bronze lying dead at their feet, pierced by hundreds of horseshoe nails.
Remember them, Lewis!
That's right!
Lewis had been one of the men who rode up into the mountains to stand with Smoke against the bounty hunters in the Lee Slater fracas. Lewis bared his teeth in a wide grin.
Let's do it!
He rode hard and fast at the killers with Smoke at his side. Horton was the first to go down. Smoke's Colt clicked on empty and he holstered it, pulling his greener one-handed. A load of buckshot and nailheads met Max head-on. The lead exploded his body into dozens of pieces, scattering blood and meat over a 10-square-yard area. Smoke stuffed the greener in his saddle boot and pulled his left-hand Colt now. He began to alternate, firing right, then left, then right again, as he continued his charge over Max's body towards Gooden, Boots, and Art Sal. Gooden shot at Lewis and hit home, the slug tearing into the gambler's left thigh and missing the big artery there. Lewis returned the favor. Art Sal fired at Lewis and missed, but nailed his horse in the right shoulder. Lewis rolled and sprang to his feet, left hand pushing his wounded left leg to keep him upright. Art Sal stepped closer to Lewis and extended his hand, pointing his Colt between Lewis's eyes, a triumphant grin on his face. Before Art Sal could react, Lewis pulled his Derringer out from behind his belt and shot both 44 barrels into Sal's chest. Boots swung his pistol toward the now unarmed and defenseless Lewis, who merely stared unflinchingly back at the outlaw. Boots' lips curled up in a snarl until they completely disappeared into the hole Smoke blew in his face with his 44s. Smoke grabbed the reins of a riderless horse while Lewis bent and picked up the Colt he had dropped. Smoke reached down and picked Lewis up with one arm and swung him into the saddle.
Thanks, partner.
Smoke just smiled and rode off, looking for other prey. Cal and Pearlie had emptied their guns and were reloading, trying to keep their mouths from shying while they punched out empty brass casing and stuffed in new ones. The Silverado Kid galloped over to where Bill Denver and Slim Watkins were riding, firing up into the cab. Bill Denver shot into the second-story window, and his slug took Monte Carson in the side of the head and took out a chunk of his scalp as it knocked him unconscious and blew him back out of sight. The Kid pointed toward Cal and Pearlie off to the side of the fracas, surrounded by the gunnies they'd killed, and then he charged forward. Denver and Watkins nodded and wheeled their mounts to follow the Kid's lead.
Look out, Pearlie! Here they come!
With no time to reload his pistols, Cal dropped him and swung the heavy repeating rifle off his back. Pearlie holstered his still-empty pistols and shucked his greener 12-gauge with the cut-down barrel from his saddle boot. The Silverado Kid, scourge and killer of women and children, the man too tough for Tombstone, took three 44-caliber slugs from Cal's rifle. Denver and Watkins got off four shots with their pistols. The first shot took Cal in the right hip above the joint, and it knocked him out of the saddle. The next shot missed, but the third and fourth both hit Pearlie. One burning a groove along his neck, and the other skimming his belly, tearing a chunk of fat off, but not hitting meat. Pearlie straightened up and let both his hammers down. Both men were dead before they hit the ground. Pearlie jumped out of his saddle and sat cradling Cal's unconscious body in his arms while he reloaded his pistols. No one else was going to hurt his friend as long as he was alive to prevent it. Jerry Jackson, train robber from Kansas, rode his horse at the cabin. Blaze and torch in one hand and Colt in the other, Ben Tolson stepped out of his doorway and onto the porch, his shotgun held high. Jackson was blown off his mount at the same time his 44 slug tore into Tolson's chest on the right side, spinning him around and back through the door he gave his life to defend. Joey, his pistols and both Winchester rifles empty, stood up in his stirrups, looking for Cal and Pearlie. He wanted to make sure they were all right.
There you are, you bastard!
Pearlie looked over his shoulder to see Colonel Waters riding at him, his sword held high above his head, blood streaming from a wound in his left shoulder.
Wells, prepare to die!
Joey bared his teeth and pulled his Arkansas toothpick from its scabbard. He wheeled red around and dug his spurs in. They passed each other, the sword flashing towards Joey's head. He ducked and parried with his long knife, deflecting Waters' blade. Both horses turned again and raced towards each other. At the last minute, Joey nudged Red with his legs, and the huge animal veered directly into Waters' smaller one, knocking both horse and rider to the ground. Joey swung his leg over the horn and bounded out of the saddle. He crouched, Arkansas toothpick held waist high in front of him, and waited for Waters to get on his feet.
Oh, you killed my men, everyone, Wells, and now you are going to die.
Your men like you, Waters, were cowards who killed defenseless boys who'd given up their guns. They didn't deserve to live, and neither do you. Come and taste my steel, coward.
Waters lunged, his sword outstretched. Joey leaned to his right, taking the point of the sword in his left shoulder, while striking underhanded at Waters. Joey's blade drove into Waters' gut just under his ribs and angled upward to pierce the officer's heart. The two men, gladiators from a war long past, just stood there, chest to chest for a moment, until the light and hatred faded from Waters' eyes, and he fell dead before the last of the Missouri volunteer. Meanwhile, Murdoch saw they were losing the battle.
Emilio, let's get out of here!
The two men who had managed to stay on the periphery of the gunfight wheeled their horses and galloped back toward the Lazy M. They were able to escape Smoke's trap only because of the heavy layer of smoke and dust in the air. By the time the men in the boulder saw him coming, they were out of range of their shotguns. The fracas lasted another 20 minutes before all the gunnies were either dead or wounded badly enough to be out of commission. It was full dark by now, and the punchers in the cabin lighted torches and joined with men from the trees and boulders, beginning to gather their wounded and dead. The injured who worked for Smoke were brought into the cabin and were attended to by Andre and the others. Their gunshot wounds were cleaned and dressed, and they were given hot soup and coffee, and for those in pain, whiskey. Smoke bent over Monty Carson, checking his bandages to make sure they were tight. Carson drifted in and out of consciousness, but Smoke was sure he would survive. Andre fussed over Lewis's leg wound, cleaning and re-cleaning it.
Just put a dressing on it, Andre. There's others here who need you more than I do.
Smoke glanced at Lewis, a worried look on his face.
Have you seen Cal or Pearlie or Joey, Lewis?
Aren't they here?
No.
Lewis struggled to his feet, using a rifle as a cane.
Let's go. They may be lying out there wounded, or worse.
The two men walked among the dead and dying outlaws as they looked for their friends. The outlaws deserved no mercy. They had taken money to kill others and would now have to face the consequences of their actions. A harsh judgment, but a just one. Finally, Smoke spied the horse Pearlie had been riding, standing over near a small creek that ran off to the side of the cabin. He ran toward the animal, praying he would find the young men alive. He stopped short at what he saw. Joey, his left shoulder wrapped in his blood-stained shirt, was trying to dress Pearlie's neck and stomach wounds, but Pearlie wouldn't let go of Cal to give him access. The young cowboy had one hand holding his wadded-up shirt against a hole in Cal's flank to stop the bleeding, while he held his Colt in the other, hammer back, protecting his young friend from anyone else who might try to harm him.
Come on, Pearlie. Fight's over. Let me take care of where you got shot. Then we can get Cal over to the cabin for treatment.
I'm not moving here till I see Smoke. I promised him I was gonna watch over Cal, and I aim to do just that.
Would you look at that, Lewis? Like a mother hen with a chick.
If I ever find a woman who will take care of me like that, I'll give up gambling and settle down.
Pearlie, you've done a good job. Now let Joey fix you up while I take Cal to the cabin so Andre can patch his wounds.
Pearlie lifted fatigue-ridden eyes to stare at Smoke.
Smoke, you got him?
Smoke lifted Cal in his arms.
Yeah, Pearlie, I got him.
Good.
Pearlie passed out. Mal Martine shook his head as Pearlie finished recounting the events of that night 2 years ago.
I can see es muy peligroso. Very dangerous to ride with you, Pearlie. From what I hear, every time Cal does, he ends up shot.
Like I said, Al, that boy draws lead like honey draws flies.